You're listening to Raphael Epstein.
Time for Film with Josh Nelson. You can find him at filmology.com. Filmology is his Twitter handle. He's on radio somewhere as well during the week. Josh, welcome.
Good afternoon.
So we are going to talk about the new... Someone's got to stop Benicio Del Toro doing these films. However, we'll get on to Sicario in a moment. Let's talk about Cut Snake, which has a marvellously compelling yet malevolent character. So I'm after people's eminently... Is it attractive? No. A compelling baddie. Any on-screen compelling baddie. 1300-222-774 is the phone number. 1300-222-774. Now, I had a chat to Tony Ayres about Cut Snake last year, so it's taken a while.
It has taken a while
to get a release, but give us the setup. What is Cut Snake about?
Cut Snake is a crime drama set in Melbourne mid-1970s. It focuses on a guy nicknamed Pommy, played by the very menacing and charismatic Sullivan Stapleton. He's fresh out of jail. He tracks down a former inmate by the nickname of Sparrow, played by Alex Russell, who's just got engaged to his girlfriend, and the return of Pommy throws Sparrow's life into turmoil, I guess is an easy way of putting it.
Yeah. Look, it's a fantastic period piece. There's also a lot of tension. Just going to play you a little scene. So imagine Sullivan Stapleton being introduced to Sparrow's fiancée, the woman in Sparrow's life, and I'm hoping that a little bit of the menacing charm comes across in this.
You really?
Mm-hmm. So we have the whole afternoon.
This is my mate from Sydney, Jim Stewart.
Hello. Paula.
So this is the big secret, eh? Worth the surprise, mate. Worth the surprise.
G'day, Paula.
I'm Jim. But you... can call me Pommy.
Hello.
Okay. Before we get into whether or not you liked it, it looks beautiful. Can you help me describe that?
Well, it does have a very 70s feel in some ways. Look, I've been sort of wrestling with this. The production design is very different to Inherent Vice, which had a distinctly 70s feel as well. But obviously,
that was great, wasn't it? That production design.
Yeah, I mean that was.
Joaquin Phoenix.
Inherent Vice probably had a lot larger budget, yeah, to say that, than Cut Snake did. But Cut Snake creates its 70s vibe primarily through the use of soundtrack, through costuming. The wigs,
short shorts.
Let's say the wigs are better than the ones in Holding the Man, even though we both liked Holding the Man as well. There's a thing about men and 70s films. We'll leave it at that. Look, the fact that it's set in the 70s is in some ways irrelevant, I think. It doesn't really explore the 70s politics, the milieu of the 70s, and indeed Melbourne. I mean, this feels like a film that could be set anywhere, although it certainly has a distinct Australian feel. But in terms of time, it actually took me a while to realise this is not a contemporary story.
Yeah, it's not obvious, is it, beyond the music that it's...
But it is a very recognisable premise. I mean, this is the return con who throws the social situation into chaos is a familiar trope. We've seen it in another fantastic Australian film, and that's my nomination for menacing villains, is David Wenham in The Boys, Rowan Wood's debut.
It's not quite as disturbing as The Boys.
Sullivan Stapleton's character in this is almost halfway between David Wenham in The Boys and Chopper.
Yeah, that's very true.
The Eric Banner character. Because he has the charisma, he has the cheeky smile, but he also has that sense of this could tip over into abject violence at any moment, so be careful.
Yes.
But also, the UK have a history of these type of films like The Limey, This Is England. So I kind of like it, and it's recognisable. And the first half of the film really establishes that. My issue with the film, and it's a personal frustration, I'm probably in the minority in terms of my response to this film, there's a revelation, and I'm not going to reveal what it is, that occurs halfway through the film, and it felt like it's there more as a twist than something the film wanted to engage with across the course of its narrative. And I found that really frustrating.
We're going to talk about this because we don't want to give it away.
Exactly.
I completely, vehemently disagree.
But I think it's something that we haven't really seen before, particularly not in this genre, but it's something really fascinating. But for me, it feels not quite there. And that was one of those ones of it's more a missed opportunity than something that the film really nails.
I felt very differently about that, actually.
It is hard to talk about.
Yeah, it gets to the heart of a lot of great issues, I think. And one advantage of the 70s, it's a little like some other films where people are incredibly inarticulate or unable to articulate their true feelings and their true emotions actually felt that it being in the 70s was actually an advantage because they don't need to say out loud what they're thinking. So there's a lot going on in the acting beyond the script that actually I thought gave the film its strength. But would you recommend it?
Look, as I said, I am in the minority. The response to this film, Australian critics and reviewers have been fairly positive across the board. Most of the reviews that have had reservations with this film have been on its festival releases overseas, so from Canada and right. the States. So I'm not sure whether there's a kind of a cultural distance or whether it's those countries that aren't familiar so much with
well,
this trope or the way
there's
in which
a lot unsaid, as I was saying.
Yep.
And a lot of the cues, a lot of the acting is inherently cultural, isn't it? So I'm not sure. I don't know if it translates outside of the country.
Possibly. But, I mean, putting my issue with that plot point aside, Sullivan Stapleton's performance is really impressive.
Yeah.
This is a massive step up from that 300 sequel, where he sort of felt like a bit of a bland carbon copy of the Gerard Butler.
He needs to do more films
one.
Like this.
This is far more compelling, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
No, look, I love it. It is called Cut Snake. Where's it on, Josh?
I think it's exclusive to CinemaNova.
Okay, look, it is really worth seeing Cut Snake. I loved it. Josh is not quite so sure.
I'm glad it has had a cinema release, and that's primarily because it's shot in an extreme widescreen format.
Yeah, it's
like
gorgeous.
This is a cinematic type film, even though both the director Tony Ayres and the screenwriter Blake Ashford come predominantly, although they have worked in film, from a television background.
Mm-hmm. And actually, Tony Ayres was on. Remember, he's one of the key people behind productions like The Slap, which I also loved. And Tony was actually chatting to Richard Stubbs, I think it was last week. He was actually quite interesting talking about Sullivan Stapleton. Very little direction on set. They had a big chat in the lead-in to filming, and then very much when they're filming, it was like, let him go. Don't talk to him. Leave him be. So check it out. Look, great Australian film, really. One of my favourite Australian films. That and Felony last year were definitely my favourite Australian films. Interested in your compelling villains. Josh has probably got a few. I'm interested in those who are both compelling and disturbing. Now, there's lots of baddies who you kind of like because they're not really that disturbing. My personal favourite is the villain who you shouldn't like but do. But you tell me your nominations, 1300 222 774. Paul's call from Westwood Square. Paul, go for it.
Hi, how you going, guys? My nomination is Anton Chigurh from No Country for Old Men.
Played by...
Javier Bardem.
Yeah, Javier, my friend. Absolutely. Why is he yours?
Well, I think he's compelling because I think he kind of really disassociates himself from, from the evil that he's kind of perpetrating, you know, like he sort of doesn't hold himself to those same standards and, you know, he's sort of that, he flips the coin to decide whether, you know, people live or die and that kind of thing. And you know, so he sort of sees himself as like an instrument of fate. I find that really compelling.
Yeah, and how different is he in that compared to something like Vicky Cristina Barcelona, where he's just entirely gorgeous and charismatic and seductive?
Absolutely, yeah. I love both films, and yeah, I was sort of quite blown away by how different he was. And,
yeah.
He's a very sexy man in Vicky Cristina Barcelona.
I'd do them all in that film. Thanks, thanks, Paul. It's the last good Woody Allen, isn't it? Vicky Cristina Barcelona. Has there been a good one since?
Was it Midnight in Paris? I didn't mind that.
Okay. Have you got a villain?
Apart from the David Wenham in The Boys, another one that reminded me just from that previous call on Chigurh, Heath Ledger's Joker.
Absolutely.
And there's that similar factor. It's the unpredictability of both those villains that makes them utterly terrifying and utterly...
Who did that first? Is there someone who did the, I don't know which way they're going to leap. I'm just thinking, is there some great 70s American film I can't think of right now? Nige has called from North Detroit. Nige.
Oh, hey, Raf. Hey, Josh.
Hey.
I haven't really got a character in a movie. I've more got a favourite actor of, villainy type roles. As you know, I'm a bit of a student of Hungarian film, and Bela Ferenc Deszoblanco, Blasco, is probably my favourite. Sometimes he went by Arisztid Olt. He did some fantastic movies where he played villains in Hungarian film. He then went to Germany.
Right.
I think he disappeared to the United States after that and took on a different name. I've done a bit of research. He took on the name maybe Bela Lugosi, but I don't know any of the roles that he played when he took that name on. But, yeah, some of those
roles... Hey, Nigel, how's your Hungarian, by the way?
It's not great. I do like, though, I do have an English to Hungarian dictionary that I like to pore over and just pick out words. And I'm nowhere near fluent, but I do try.
By the way, I always got the impression, seeing as you're a regular caller, that you sort of didn't have a fixed income. However, I noticed a certain publication carrying your byline.
It's more of a lend it forward type situation there. I just hope to get good vibes from them. I was actually hoping that you wouldn't have noticed that because a few people have suggested that maybe I've gone mainstream. But
do you get like free subscription or I don't know free paper to make your own newspaper or something?
Well, I feel that I have benefited from their top 10 coffees in Melbourne lists for many years. So
yeah, I guess you owe them. Hey, Nige, I guess you owe them. Look, thanks for calling.
Nige should use a nom de plume. That's the workaround.
Well, that's true. That's the way to it. Look, quite a few of you, of course, mentioning the biggest, baddest, most compelling villain on screen ever, including Greg and Ballarat mentioning this one. That's not the original theme from the original film.
That's Jedi or Empire,
isn't
it? That's
a film or two on, isn't it? Yeah, well spotted. No, I like the shape of your ears, young man. Look, your compelling film villain, the more disturbing, the better. Nigel's called from Cheltenham, from one Nige to another. Nige?
It's a popular name today. But look, obviously, Kevin Spacey as Kaiser Soze in Usual Suspects, and his role, I can't remember the name of the character, but Seven.
John Doe.
John Doe, yes, indeed.
Whoa.
Yeah, no, very true. I like that one. And I was thinking Malcolm McDowell in Clockwork Orange.
Oh, yeah.
Surely. Number one. The
charismatic villain, yeah.
Look, 1300-222-774 is the phone number. We've been talking about Cutsnake. We're going to get into Sicario soon. It's a new film with Emily Blunt, Benicio Del Toro and Josh Brolin.
Yeah.
He's in everything.
I know.
You're listening to Raphael Epstein. Call now on 1300-222-774 or text 0437-774-774. You're with Raph.
Josh Nelson is with me. We're talking about Cutsnake, Sicario in a moment. Compelling villains, just on Twitter. Janelle's suggesting Loki in Thor, yes, although not quite too disturbing. Now, Josh, we've got a little bit of Sicario, but the trailer is full of explosions and cars and gunshots and those sorts of things. But Emily Blunt, Josh Brolin, Benicio Del Toro, what's the basic setup?
This is a film from French-Canadian director Denis Villeneuve, really, really talented filmmaker. His previous works include Incendies, and also the Jake Gyllenhaal double Prisoners, which had Hugh Jackman in it as well, and Enemy, which was a small-budget film, which was really great. This is I guess you could call it a tactical procedural film set on the US-Mexican border. Emily Blunt is an FBI agent. She's sequestered into a group task force headed by Josh Brolin, who we think is from the Department of Defense, and an aide played by Benicio Del Toro, or sort of a liaison. And pretty soon she finds herself in a ethical and jurisdictional nightmare dealing with cartels, the drug trade, and where all these players fit in the puzzle.
Look, I want to play a bit of the trailer because my impression of this is very much things blowing up and not much depth. But let's just listen to the trailer first.
Every day people are kidnapped, killed.
This is a major escalation for the cartel, so deep inside the American heartland.
We have no jurisdiction in Mexico.
Do you want to find the guys responsible?
Yes.
This is where we start.
What's it like, Josh?
I thought this was bloody great.
Oh, really?
This is a really impressive film.
Because I looked at the publicity and I thought, nah, don't need to see it.
Well, I hope the explosions get the bums on seats, but for the rest of us, this is a really polished sound drama. There's not a whole lot of gunfight. No, maybe I shouldn't say that because we want the bums on seats. This reminded me, it's not a strange beast, a cross between Steven Soderbergh's Traffic in that kind of cross-border territory dealing with the different levels of the drug trade and cartels, and also Bigelow's Zero Dark Thirty. It has a really similar feel. And what I loved about this film in terms of the way in which it positions Emily Blunt's character is she's not quite a novice, but she's very much in the dark in terms of what's going on and the layers of complexity beyond the surface. And the audience is identifying, or is sort of structured to identify with her character from the beginning. So we're in the position of we don't really know what's going on. So the film has this increasing build of tension, building up to what we think is going to be some sort of, you know, revelation, but also this sense of, you know, she is struggling to work out in terms of her own morality and the morality of the government where she fits in this in this broader puzzle. This is a really polished film.
So I've read things like A Mexico, which is an extraordinary book about the drug trade and how it's turned the two states into one. I've read that recent New Yorker piece about the tunnels built by El Chapo. So I looked at that film and I thought, it can't possibly get to the heart of the complexity that I've read about. But there's some sort of dramatic truth at the heart of the cross-border drug trade that the film manages to capture on screen?
Yes and no. It doesn't aim for the... doesn't aim to provide answers in the same way that, say, Soderbergh's film, I think, was trying to capture the depth across multiple levels of government and personal responsibility. It's more about, this is a confusing issue that crosses, I guess, ethical dilemmas in terms of government agencies and also aspects of personal violence and vengeance right on that heartland. I mean, this is, I think the whole thing was filmed around Albuquerque, so this is Breaking Bad territory. Okay. The film is stunning visually. Roger Deakins.
Something about New Mexico just lends itself to the big screen.
Yeah,
it?
Roger Deakins' cinematography in this film, a longtime Coen Brothers collaborator, is stunning. Yeah. And the soundtrack, it's a sort of electronic type soundtrack, but these hums and these beats.
I'm going to see this next week, my week off.
Johan Johansson, an Icelandic composer.
Right.
This is just strong across the board, and I think it's interesting in terms of gender. We come back to this with the Emily Blunt character, because she's not playing the kind of hard ass Ripley type character that which we saw her play in the Tom Cruise film Edge of Tomorrow. She's very much the vulnerable type character in this, you know, den of men. And I think it's trying to do something interesting in terms of the people on both sides of the border, even though the focus here is predominantly on the Americans.
Okay, so this is worth seeing.
I think it's very worth seeing. This film will probably feature, come
Oscar contender
award season. And this is the best thing. We're heading back into award season.
Because I haven't seen a good Hollywood film in a while that wasn't Shoot 'Em Up and Explosions. We are talking about Sicario. Quick final question. I really like all three key actors, Josh Brolin, Emily Blunt, Benicio Del Toro. They've all made terrible films, but they're all good in this?
Yeah, and all underplayed. This is not the histrionics of that we've seen from Del Toro.
Yeah.
This is very much kind of a subdued performance from Blunt. And Brolin is arrogant Texan, but not the arrogant Texan that we saw last week in Everest. So different again.
Because I interviewed Benicio Del Toro and I hated the film and it didn't go well.
Was this The Counselor?
No, it was the Oliver Stone one, the really violent Stone one, and I really disliked it. But, that didn't go well, that interview. Bernadette's call from Footscray. What's your ominous villain?
Jackie Weaver in Animal Kingdom.
Oh, yes, very much. She's revoltingly compelling.
Okay, and you want to like her so much, and then it's kind of...
I love the sound effects. Let me mention a few that you have thrown at us on text. Henry Fonda in Once Upon a Time in the West. Absolutely. Frank Booth in Blue Velvet. Moriarty in the BBC Sherlock. That's Jess's suggestion in Ballarat. Someone's suggesting Robert Carlyle in Ravenous. I would nominate Robert Carlyle in
Trainspotting
as just... I still get nightmares thinking about that. Josh is worried
that
right
glass
now. Yeah, the glass.
Over the back of the bar.
It's terrifying. Sicario, worth seeing. We're heading into award season. Yeehaw. Cut Snake is only on at the Nova. Both worth seeing. Josh, thanks for coming in.
Pleasure.